Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Rayados 90 podcast. I'm your host, Eduardo Raso, and joining me is Paul. Paul, a lot to get into. Also, Pat's going to be joining us probably like a few minutes into the podcast. But yeah, but Paul, a lot to get into. Monterrey didn't have a really good week. They drew 2-2 against Necaxa, and it was a bittersweet 1 point, considering that they had the lead, and then Necaxa, what they scored in stoppage time, and then obviously the 3-1 loss to León wasn't very pretty. It was just a rough week. I think they've only had 2 points out of a possible 18, if I'm not mistaken, and yeah, it's just been very, very slow start. I'm not yet hitting the panic button yet, but let's dive let's dissect these two matches. Let's get started with Necaxa. What were your impressions first before we go in depth in the 2-2 draw?
Sure. Thanks for having me. On paper, I was very excited for the double nine with Funes Mori and Vincent Janssen up top. I thought it was going to be a good combination. I was also excited to, we'll see in Maxi Mesa. I thought he was going to have a good game also. That wasn't really the case. He disappointed me. And then Charlie Rodriguez as a number 10, which I think is a position that he's going to eventually evolve into. But yeah, I mean, I had high hopes for this game. And yeah, like you said, it kind of disappointed me a little bit.
Let's just sum up the scoring for Monterrey. In the first half, you had a great buildup between Maxi Mesa, who handed off to Vincent Janssen. Vincent Janssen threaded, I think it was between two players, where he passed the ball to Charlie Rodriguez. Rodriguez sets up Funes Mori. Funes Mori gets away by one defender and gives it to a wide open, for the most part, Miguel Layún, who puts it in the back of the net. And after seeing that buildup, I thought, okay, this is where they're going to get it together. We obviously wanted to see the double nine, and we're seeing Janssen, for the most part, be a striker, a central attacking mid as a striker. But then after that, it kind of went all downhill. Not downhill, but it was a little disappointing, considering like the first 20 minutes, when you look at some of the attacking momentum charts, for the first 20 minutes it was all Monterrey. And this has been not a habit, but you can see this as a frequent, for lack of a better word, behavior of the attack, where first 20 minutes they'll control possession, they'll generate scoring chances. But as we saw, again, not to jump too far ahead, but like we saw against León too, and against Necaxa, they can maybe get one goal or none at all. So I'm waiting for them to finally find that, I guess, right. How would you say? I'm waiting for them to find that, not momentum, but I'm waiting for them to find just that. Consistency, I guess, would be the
flow,
word.
That yeah, flow,
that yeah, that flow. But were they able to capitalize on them controlling possession, generating scoring chances, where they come away with more than just one goal? We saw it under Turco's first stint, where that offense is just bam, bam, bam. They're like nonstop attacking, where they'll be averaging 3-4 goals a game. And when you look at the attack so far, it's barely a goal, maybe two goals a game. I'm still waiting for them to find it. Obviously, now it's more of a sense of urgency. Like, okay, we're losing time for them to figure it out. If they would have started slow but still accumulated points, I could have been a little bit more forgiving, I guess you can say, where, okay, yeah, they'll figure out the offense. They'll find that offense that they had under Turco. In his first stint, or he'll implement that offense, I should say, that he had in his first stint. But still, 20 minutes against Necaxa, they only came away with one goal. And then, yeah, it was, for lack of a better word, it was not very pretty. Just the offense in general, you could see that they had, and again, in the Leon game as well, you can see that the midfield had some issues getting the ball to the forwards, and not a lot was being generated. And the second goal for Monterrey ended up being an own goal from, I'm not sure who was the player, but it ended up being an own goal after a cross from Jesús Gallardo, I guess ricocheted off a Necaxa player and ended up in the back of the net. And right there, I thought, okay, that's the kind of luck that a champion needs. That's the kind of luck good teams get. And I thought that, for the most part, I thought they were going to walk away with 3 points. And like I said, like I tweeted out before that, I was like, sometimes you just have to be lucky than good. And then
I know, it, I
like
that.
3 or 4 minutes later, terrible clearance. I guess we'll get into this too right now. But a 36-year-old Basanta had trouble clearing the ball. And it ended up back in the back of the net and 2-2. Like I said, they walked away with the point, but it was kind of bittersweet considering they were just like, what, 3 or 4 minutes away from walking away with 3 points or a much-needed 3 points. But yeah, let's get into the elephant in the room for this game, which was starting two center backs over the age of 30, but more so guys in their mid-30s. A lot of criticism on Twitter. There was people saying, how come they didn't replace Johan Vasquez? Is it time to give someone the U-20s a chance? Considering that the U-20 team is, I think, first in their in the league for that age group. And yeah, I mean, they didn't address it in the transfer season. But yeah, like, what did you make of seeing two guys in their mid-30s playing center back for Monterrey?
I was a little worried at first with Necaxa's speed down the wings. But then I started thinking that their nine, Quiroga, is not really a mobile nine. So I kind of like Basanta and Nico Sanchez because they have that height advantage. Mm-hmm. However, Basanta doesn't really have the legs anymore to be in. He's a good player, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
He reads the game pretty well.
The fact that he played 90 minutes is kind of what stuck out to me. Like, I wouldn't mind him if he's coming in 30 minutes. I think he can give you 30 minutes and just try to hold down the fort. I think he's smart enough where he can read a play and not get beat. But yeah, him playing 90 minutes, that's not ideal that you want to see a 36-year-old out there for Monterrey.
No, for sure. It just speaks volumes of our inteligencia deportiva. Maybe Johan Vasquez, I've seen different reports, whether it's a loan with an option to buy or a straight up sale. Hopefully it's a loan or we have like a buyback clause or something.
Yeah.
He's been performing for Pumas XL.
Oh yeah. But I think he wanted to go too. Like, yeah, it would have been nice to keep him. I wanted it for them to keep him, just considering the foreigner rule. But the guy wanted starter minutes. I'm pretty sure Monterrey couldn't guarantee him starter minutes just because he was playing behind Nico Sanchez and Cesar Montes. And yeah, I've heard conflicting reports. I think it's just a straight up buy from Pumas. Maybe there's, but uh-huh. It's not as black and white as it is like in Europe where you kind of already know if it's a loan or if it's a sale. But yeah, no. But go ahead, man.
Yeah, sure. I was also looking at the Basanta stats. I don't want to bash him too much because, like I said, I mean, he is over the age of, what, 35? He's 36 already?
Yeah, he's 36 years old.
Yeah, but he did have 89% accurate passes. And granted, mm-hmm. those were mostly back passes. But out of the 10, I mean, long balls he attempted, which is aligning with Turco's system, he completed 7. So he can still play in that system, but yeah, he can't really give you 90 minutes anymore. Like, that clearance at the end of the game just showed his...
Yeah, but for me, it was just like, he should have read... what I was more disappointed in him is that he didn't read it better. Because when you look back at it, it's like he's thinking of going up to, you know, clear the ball with his head, But then he, and then he, I'm not sure if he recognizes this or it's just, you know, he didn't want to do it, or, you know, he switched his, you know, switched his mind at the last second. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't go up to clear the, go up to challenge the ball with his head instead. Or I think he does go up to challenge, but he leaves someone unmarked. I know someone left a guy unmarked, and then the clearance was, as a whole, was terrible. And like I said, it ends up in the back of the net. It's just that whole, you would think, just kick it anywhere. You don't necessarily have to kick it straight far away. Just kick it anywhere, just to clear the ball, just get it away from the penalty box. But yeah, it was just a horrible clearance. But yeah, I don't want to bash Basanta too much. I mean, for a 36-year-old, he did play well.
Yeah.
At least, you know, but it's just that last, or that last memory of that game is just that bad clearance or bad read by him and just the entire defense. It was just it's been a wild ride. Not a wild ride, but it's just been an adventure. Just because we're seeing miscommunications, bad breakdowns, and yeah, it's been very sloppy. And again, I want to believe that they'll get it together with, you know, Vagnoni coming back soon, hopefully, and everybody getting put in their right place. But it is worrisome. But anything else that you wanted to touch on that Necaxa game before we transition over to the Leon game? Because that one was difficult to watch too. But
yeah,
anything else on Necaxa that you wanted to add? Because I know you said Maxi Mesa kind of disappointed you. He's kind of drawing the fury of many supporters. And
yeah, man. I mean, he was basically playing for free because, I mean, he already had a yellow card, and then when he committed that foul, I mean, horrible foul, like no defensive awareness at all in the area, bring down Quiroga. I mean, he honestly should have been sent off for that. So he played that game for free. But even then, he didn't offer you that much going forward or in the defensive aspect of the game. So it was just another invisible Maxi Mesa performance for him.
Yeah, I was high on him coming into the season. I thought that he would transition that good performance that he had against America in that second leg, and we'd finally see him. I mean, the first couple of games, he looked like he was starting to figure it out and be more consistent. But as, I guess, the situation becomes more desperate, he's kind of started to disappear a little. Not all his fault, but still, again, it's just people look at that $14 million price tag and it's just like, okay, I want more because look at how much we paid you. But at this point, he's just becoming an inconsistent player, a good inconsistent player, but he's at the most a solid rotation player. You can't really depend on him week in and week out to give you top quality minutes that leads to scoring chances, potential goals. But yeah,
and that's really not what you're looking for out of one of your star signings. I mean,
yeah,
is he the most expensive transfer in Real's history?
I think
and he's not really delivering those goods. So yeah, I mean, we got to do something about that.
I know I read, I'm not sure how accurate it is, but it's from TYC Sports out in Argentina. But I got to look back and see what team again. There's another team that's interested in him. It's still a little too early.
Olympia.
Yeah. Oh. So we'll see where that goes, but it's still too early to see what happens there. But yeah, it was a tough night. It was, I guess, the one game they had in hand. On all the other clubs except America, and they dropped those points. And then, like, let's just talk about the match against Leon. I thought, again, before the match, people were, I guess media was saying that Monterrey's been unbeaten for the last couple of years against Leon. Same thing. I was kind of worried once everybody started tweeting that. People were all saying the same thing when they played Querétaro a couple of weeks ago. And yeah, that streak didn't end up continuing. And the same thing happened against Leon. Let's just give me your initial thoughts just on the 3-1 loss to Leon.
This game should be seen as two different games. One yeah. before the red card and one after the red card.
Yeah.
We can't really judge the team based on the second half performances. We know, I mean, we aren't that leaky in the back. I mean, we're not the best defensive structure, but we're not that leaky in the back. I mean, one man down, you have to fix the whole defense. Layun has to come down. And I mean, I don't want to get into Turco's subs yet, but he took a while to adjust the system. It was just a different game. But if we're considering just the first half, I think Rayados played really well. Funes Mori missed, not sitters, but chances that we know he can score.
Yeah. I've seen some people count 6, 7, 8 that, you know, good quality scoring chances that he missed. So I'd say he missed quite a handful.
Yeah, SofaScore has that he has 3 shots on target and 4 off target. And one of those off target shots is the one that, like, just scrapes by the post. So, yeah, he had a good game performance-wise. I mean, the ball just didn't go in the back of the net. And Leon is one of his most, like, clients.
Yeah.
He always scores against them. I think he has, like, 8 and 10 or something. Yeah, I mean, it was a good game before the red card. The red card just threw everything off, and it was a red card. I was looking at the play over and over. I mean, I've been looking at it multiple times throughout the weekend and today because I now see the contact outside the box. At first, I saw it inside the box, but I now see it a little outside the box, and, I mean, good call from the VAR.
Yeah, I guess we should just start talking about that. Not the call. I mean, obviously, it is what it is. But what was going on in that? I'm not even talking about whether it's a penalty or not, but the free kick following, like, because for me, it's just everything went by quick, and it's like, how the hell did that ball end up in the back of the net? Because when I saw the replay again, it's just the guys are just standing around. It's like, why was everybody just standing around?
And, yeah, no, nobody broke off the line.
Yeah, and it's just like, was this just like some type of arrangement to give them the goal? Because it was such a weird play for just everybody to be just standing around and not doing anything. And obviously, Leon, their attack was quick. You know, they jumped on it, boom, and sent it down the back of the net, and all the momentum Monterrey had heading into what could have been a 1-0 lead into the half ended up being deflated 1-1. You're down 10 men and you're playing against arguably the best team in all of Mexico so far through five weeks. But yeah, what for you, what do you think were the adjustments that Turco should have made in that second half? And we'll talk about the non-Vincent Janssen sub, but what were some adjustments that you were either surprised or did you want to see him make?
I was thinking about this yesterday, and I'm not too sure if I wanted Craneviter and beef up the midfield a little more so we could have more possession, or Edson Gutierrez to just fix that back line, move Stefan Medina over to the right center back, left center back position, and then putting Edson Gutierrez on the right back spot. I think that would have been a good call, and he did end up doing that. But it was a little too late in the game.
Yeah. Pat's here. I've added him, but Pat, we just finished talking about the Necaxa match, so if you want to add anything, and we're midway through recapping the Leo match where Rayados started off well. They started creating, they had plenty of scoring chances where they could have been up more than just one after Jesus Gallardo finished off a pass from Stefan Medina. And then we're at the point where Nico Sanchez gets his red card, gets thrown out, and Leon just, we're talking about that wacky play where it's a free kick, everybody's standing around, and Leon puts it in the back of the net, and it's 1-1 heading into the half. So if you want to sum up any of your thoughts in the match against Necaxa and then just that first half against Leon.
Yeah, what's up, guys? Nice to be here with you. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I'm not going to say anything different than what we all know, what you guys have said before. The game, both the games, just, well, in the first half of the León match, I feel like we played way better than before, but still, just a bunch of, it just seems that everything right now is down to attitude. I feel like the players are obviously, the physical part is still there, but I just feel like to this point now, some of them should already be like 100% fit and ready to play. Mm-hmm. Seems like they're not there 100%. But, you know, I think also a lot of this comes to attitude. A lot of, you know, things going on outside the pitch. And it just seems like they don't know that the season started pretty much. I just feel like they're not in that mood, or they don't seem to be in that mood. It just sucks that, you know, the talent hasn't prevailed and they haven't won the games, you know. They ended up being losses. But just a horrible season to start, really. Nothing more to add than that.
Yeah. I was telling Paul, I'm waiting for Turco to implement that offense that we saw in his first stint, where they're averaging 3 to 4 goals a game. They're pressuring. I mean, they're pressuring right now the opposition, but the first 20 minutes where they're controlling possession, generating a lot of scoring chances, but maybe they come away with one goal, maybe not. I mean, we saw it against Necaxa and León, where the first 20 minutes they're averaging a lot of shots, a lot of chances, controlling possession, and they come away with just one goal. Especially on the road, you kind of want to put the pressure on the opposition. And I'm waiting for them to just find that level that we saw last, like against Santos, where they were just, the offense was just on another level. And what Turco had in his first stint, how long do you think it will take for us to see that offense that's you know, scoring 3, 4, 5 goals a game?
Yeah. At this point, I'm not confident on seeing that again. maybe his speech, his words are not having the same impact with the players. Also, you want to score goals? I don't know. Maybe get Jansen in there.
We're going to touch on that right now.
And also, I mean, obviously, Avilés, we all know the recent Avilés, but he was a scoring machine. Mm-hmm. At his best. He also had Pato Sanchez, who scored a good amount of goals while he was here. And then, you know, Dorlan, I know we loved him this past December, but before that he had been bad. And I feel like it's just back to same old Dorlan. I feel like he's lost his hunger. And you know, Jansen, I mean, we can't touch on the past like Avilés and Pato Sanchez, but we can touch on Jansen. And I know you said we're going to touch on that, but
let's get right into it, because that was the one hot topic conversation Saturday night. And that was, when is Jansen coming in? Because once it was 2-1, I was waiting. But even then, once Nico went, you know, was out of the game due to his red card, I was expecting a Jansen substitution, because in the past, like, I was I'm not sure who I was telling this to, but I said it to multiple people. We've seen Turco not hesitate to take out someone if they're having a bad night. Like, we saw it in the final against America. We saw it against Pumas, where he'll pull out Pizarro, even though he's one of the best players on the team. But hey, if he's seen that he's not performing that day or that night, He'll make the right substitution. But for this night, Funes Mori, obviously, it wasn't his night. He was just missing a lot of potential goals. And I thought, you know what, you're already down 10 men. Jansen can offer you more in terms of, like, helping build up an attack. He doesn't need the ball. Like, he doesn't need the other forwards, the midfield, to help set up a play. Like, Jansen can help set it up himself, and he'll help set up other players too, not just himself. So I thought, maybe, you know what, Jansen offers you more when you're down 10 men. Just pull the substitution. But he didn't. And then when they were down 2-1, I thought, okay, now he's gonna do it. But again, he didn't. Instead, he elected for Maxi Mesa and Rodolfo Pizarro. And then I think the last sub was Edson Gutierrez. So there was no Vincent Jansen. So, Pat, I think I'll just start with you before I throw this to Paul. How shocked were you or how surprised were you not to see Vincent Jansen at any point in that match against Leon?
Oh, very shocked. I mean, you would think he would play. I don't know. It's just so weird that he doesn't. I don't know if Turco what he's thinking is behind all that. And it's weird. I know Jansen kind of looks fine with it, at least in the videos that we see with the players. But I don't know. I mean, not playing a single minute in a match that you need goals, it's just weird to me how it all.
And they kind of needed to win, considering that they drew against Necaxa. Yeah. And I said last week, they needed at least 4 points just to try to calm everyone's nerves. And they came away with 1 point out of a possible 6.
Exactly. It was like not a must-win match. But, I mean, come on. You got to start putting some points on the table. And Jansen is a guy that can score goals, and goals help you get points. I don't know. Maybe he's tried that Jansen Funes Mori in practice, and it just doesn't seem too comfortable to go with it just yet. I mean, at least that's what he kind of lets us know. You think Jansen could be a solution because he's not putting Funes Mori out for him. So yeah, I don't know, man. I'm shocked, and hopefully it changes soon, man. And Jansen is not going to come to Mexico to play to not play.
Yeah. Paul, if you want to chime in.
Yeah, sure. I would just hate. Well, first of all, hi, Patrick. How are you doing? And I would just hate to start seeing Jansen a little more frustrated about his playing time. I'm sure he was promised a few things on his contract whenever he signed the dotted line. But yeah, I would just hate for us to lose a player of that caliber just because we're so stubborn in playing Funes Mori. I mean, at one point, we got to – maybe if the double nine is not working, maybe it's just dropping Funes Mori for a few matches and trying Jansen out. I mean, that worked charms in past Liguilla. Mm-hmm. And I know we had the new manager bump that back then, but, I mean, Jansen has been providing the goods, either scoring or assisting. So I don't see the point in not playing him. And our schedule, like you said, we need at least 4 points out of this. Our schedule is not going to get any easier from now on. We have Juarez at home, which, I mean, Juarez were technically on paper supposed to win, but they're flying right now. They're in third place.
Yeah, no, Juarez has been really great. I think they went into to the Azteca. They won. And so this team, they beat Monterrey last year, too. So it's not like a squad that they should take lightly. And then, obviously, they have America following that. So
Toluca away, which we never win that. I mean, we just have to start getting points somewhere along the line. Because in Liga MX, like it or not, we have a lot of money. But it's been getting more competitive throughout the years. And there's no really easy teams anymore. If anybody could beat anybody now we're dropping points against Necaxa. Against Querétaro, I mean, teams that are on paper we should win. And in the past few years, we've been, getting good results from those matches. But now, I mean, we have our hard matches, which is against América, Toluca, Chivas, Santos, Tigres. And those are the matches that we usually, sometimes draw points.
Yeah.
So, I don't want to hit the panic yet.
Yeah, I was going to ask you guys right now, is it time to hit the, where are you in terms of, hitting the panic button? I'll start with you, Paul. Where is your sense of urgency at? Let's put it this way. From a scale of 1 to 10, where is your panic meter at?
Before the Leon match, it was probably a 4. But now it's getting more into 6. Just because I'm seeing the schedule we have ahead of us. And, I'm seeing the teams that we have ahead of us, how they're playing, their form. And, us, we're not showing anything. I think the Santos match is going to be a good either make or break. I mean, hopefully they get good confidence out of that. But, if we take an L in that Santos match. I mean, we're going to go into Juarez at home, but with absolutely zero confidence against a team that's flying right now.
Yeah. Pat, where's your panic meter at?
I'm like that, you know, after Necaxa, I was like, okay, tough draw, you know, we could have gone without with that result. But, you know, this is the Liga MX, and I'll be at a 3-4 in the panic scale. But then after this one, it definitely, you know, rose to 6 or 7. Also, you know, at the beginning of every league, sometimes some teams are flying and some teams are down. And that kind of like fluctuates around with time. So a lot of the teams that are, you know, doing good right now may drop, and the teams like us that are doing bad may start flying. I mean, that's I'm panicking, but at the same time, that's kind of like giving me hope.
Mm-hmm. I think I'll just ask you guys this before we switch topics. What do you want to see fix? Whether it be seeing a different player in there or a different formation, what do you want to see change? Because obviously what we're seeing right now isn't working. None of it's clicking. You see sometimes during the matches there, the midfield can't get the ball to the strikers. And it looks like, I know there was no preseason, and so that's what I keep in mind, but still there's no, I guess, encouraging signs. I know the first goal against Necaxa, that one really kind of made me believe that, okay, they're starting to figure it out. But then the offense went just missing. There was not a lot of scoring chances in that game. I know against León, they were able to generate a lot more scoring chances, but they weren't able to put it in the back of the net. But for let's start with Paul, what do you want to see get fixed, or what's your, I guess, recommendation if you had a heart-to-heart talk with Turco? What do you want to see next in this for this team? Like, what whether it be a certain player, a certain formation, what do you think needs to change?
We need to sort out the defense. Out of our 5 matches, we've only repeated, I mean, granted, we've had some injuries and, I mean, now suspensions along the way, but we've only repeated the back line 2 times, which is that, I mean, the one we all know, Mangione on the left, Nico Sanchez, Montes, and Medina on the right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the back line, yeah, that has the connection. That's the back line that won us the championship. That's the back line that led, I mean, what, only before the final 2 goals in, 3 goals in. So that's the back line that we should stick to. And then from then, just build on the midfield, maybe introduce Granovita a little more. Just give some competitiveness to Charlie and Celso Ortiz, so they know, I mean, their spot could always be, I mean, taken by someone with Granovita's abilities. And maybe try the double 9 a little more. But if it's really not working, you gotta play whoever is in form at the moment. And yes, Jansen hasn't really scored, but you can see, though, that hasn't scored this season, but you can see how the team plays around him. I mean, we saw it in the Pumas match when he came on for Pizarro. You can see that he sees the game different than other players. He has this vision. And like you said it best, I mean, he's a number 10 playing in the striker position. He has this vision that not a lot of players have. So I think we should give him a chance. If the double 9 is not going to work, maybe give him a chance to solo striker. So, yeah, those are my hot fixes on the back line and the sort out the attacking position.
Yeah, I think for me, you're going to have to give Jansen 1 league match and see what happens there. There's just so much. I guess the Copa MX, you can, considering the opponent is Santos, but I want to see how serious Santos takes this. I'm pretty sure they'll take it serious now that we're pretty much nearing the end of this tournament. But I want to see him play against, if he can play against Juarez or America, and see how he plays just by himself. Because to be honest, we've seen him in the Liga when it's just him and him alone. But like in terms of like the regular season, it's still, we haven't seen him go for a stretch of games by himself. And so, like, I do want to see him just how, you know, how he can handle being the guy. It's like, no, it's not a, and this is the thing I kind of hate with Twitter. Sometimes it makes it seem like you're for one player and you're against another. It's like, no, I want to just go with who's playing well. It's who's ride whoever's hot. And it's just, right now it's all about trying to get some points. But Pat, I guess I'll ask you now, what do you want to see change for you to start, you know, lowering your panic level a little bit? Because there's still a lot of games left, but I want to see some encouraging signs. I know I've seen spurts of it here and there, but I want to see more offense that we both know that this team can give us.
Yeah, I mean, one thing is, first of all, is there's really, you know, you got to start winning points. So you either play who's hot, like you guys said, drop who's really not feeling it, but also drop the guy that's not with the right attitude. Like, the team wants to be champions once again. If you're taking it easy because it's the third week, the fourth week, whatever week, and the opponent is not that tough, yeah, you're not playing, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of players that are out there in our team that are rarely get even minutes and are hungry. You see, with even with Vincent Janssen, a guy who's played in Europe, and he, when he's in the field, he just seems determined to try and win. Mm-hmm. The young guys and sometimes the people that are in there, like Funes Mori and Pavon, and even if Nico Sanchez is not informed, get him out of there.
Yeah,
we don't need to play players that may.
I was gonna ask you this, Pat. Since he brought up Nico Sanchez, and you said that if he's not playing well, then it's time to then don't hesitate to take him out. But the backup is a 36-year-old Basanta. And so I know you weren't on just yet when we were talking Basanta, but I'll ask you right now, since this topic was brought up again. Can Basanta handle playing 30 minutes, at least 30 minutes, like for a sub? Like, can he handle 30 minutes, as a sub? Or what do you think's gonna have to happen? Because there's still a lot of games left, and if they're gonna rely on two center backs, that's gonna be tough.
Yeah, I mean, that's yeah. I never liked the fact that Basanta was gonna be an important player in this season, just because of, you know, we love him and everything, but he's pretty much done. And you know, I know the physicality, especially right now, it seems like we're all down. But I mean, man, I'll go with a young guy that's hungry before playing somebody that may play well. I don't know. Yeah. It's a little bit frustrating to see some of these players out there.
Yeah, I mean, like I told Paul there, the U20 team is in first place in their age group, and I mean, it wouldn't hurt to give one of those guys just at least a taste if they need to give one of the players a day off, or they need someone to come in as a sub, just because, like, and again, this is the ugly part of Twitter. It's just because you don't, like, the guy's 36 years old, he's on his final legs. It's just because you don't want him to be out there at this point in his career doesn't mean you don't respect what he's done for the club. And I think that's what some people were tweeting, like, why are you running him out of town? Why are you throwing, you know, why, you know, he's a club legend. Why are you, why aren't you respecting him, et cetera, et cetera. It's just, no, it's just at this point in his career, it's not wise for a team that has, you know, championship aspirations to be relying on a 36-year-old player. It's just, especially playing 90 minutes, it's crazy. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and you're talking about players with attitude, might as well transition over to the player that's right now, not sure what's going to happen with him. I know there's talks that maybe he's not going to Miami after all, but that's Rodolfo Pizarro. And Pat, you're there in Miami. What do you think is going to happen with this? Is this eventually going to happen, or is it not going to happen?
I don't know. I feel like he's staying, at least for now. Miami needs a player. They're not thinking of spending that much on a guy that's really not going to have the biggest impact, at least on the city and people trying to go to the games. So I think they're kind of double thinking it. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking he's staying, but I don't know.
Right now, Pizarro's kind of going on the offense. Like earlier in the in the middle of last week, we saw like a lot of the media following him at the airport, not stalking him, but just badgering him with questions as he was meeting up with the squad in León. And now he's kind of gone on the offensive on Twitter. What do you think is I don't know, like, do you think he's going to be happy here staying for another couple more months, Pat?
I don't know. At least from what I can know, I know he wants to leave. I know he wants to come to Miami. But I think he'll be happy if he ends up staying. I think he's a guy that, you know, has some good relationships with the players there. The players like him, and if he stays, he'll be fine. I just hope that if he stays, get into the game with us.
Yeah, Paul, what do you think is going to happen with Pizarro, or what do you want to see happen with him? Because realistically, financially, I don't think Inter Miami is going to pay. I don't think they're going to pay that price for him. And so he's going to stay. And like Pat was saying, it's time for some players to check their attitude and get it together.
I was surprised. Today, Twitter finger Pizarro attacked again. He attacked Nico Garcia. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw that. And I saw him going after Diego Armando Medina. So yeah, he was. I'm not sure who else he decided to go after.
I really want him to stay. I like him as a player. I just don't want him to become a liability and break the locker room. Mm-hmm. That's the last thing we need at the moment. So if he's gonna stay and be professional about it, then fine. I mean, by all means, if you're only gonna stay for 6 months and be a professional about it, that's fine. But if you're going to only try and perform, because he doesn't even, like, perform in all important games. Like, he tries to perform. Mm-hmm. Sometimes he performs, like, in the Tigres final, but sometimes he doesn't, like, in the América final. So it's just a matter of if his head is in the right space, mm-hmm. I think he's going to be fine for us. Like, we didn't talk about this, but when he came on, I thought he was pretty good. He mm-hmm. had some good progressions and passing the ball into the channels. I thought he was good mm-hmm. in that León game. Granted, the León players were tired already and stuff, but I mean, he was good. So we're gonna get that Pizarro then, by all means. A semi-young Mexican that's good with his feet, can distribute the ball. Fine, I'm okay with it. But if we're gonna get the diva we've been used to in the last months, then I really don't want him to stay.
Yeah, it's pretty much gonna be up to Turco Mohamed to just manage the, for lack of a better word, I guess, the egos in the dressing room and juggle the lineups with the foreigners and see what happens there. But as we kind of stated, this upcoming week is another important week. Tomorrow, or when you're listening to this today, they play against Santos, and one of the newcomers is finally going to play. Not official, but it's kind of being thrown out there that more than likely, Matias Granovetter is going to be starting against Santos. And I'll start with Pat. Pat, what are you expecting out of the former River player?
Yeah, I can't wait to see him play. I'm not expecting... Well, I'm expecting good stuff, of course. But, you know, I have to see him play. I just feel like I have to see him play, see how he does, how he performs with us. What's his highest, what's his lowest, and then go from there. But I just want to see him start getting some minutes with the first team.
Adding to that, can you hear a comment? Do you think, I mean, I know this is jumping the gun because we haven't even seen his debut, but how do you think Turco's going to play him or where do you think he's going to play him? Do you think it's going to be a double five with someone on top of the diamond, or?
Yeah, I mean, at least I think he'll go with Celso and him, and then Charlie, and then yeah, I think that's I think how he's at least gonna start it off, and then we'll see, you know, with the passing of minutes and games, how he fits in better. But I think that's how he'll start, at least if he even starts the game. He's starting tomorrow, so well, he's starting by himself, but in the Liga, when he's fit, when he's ready, I think that's how he'll do it.
So is that? Do you think that's maybe thinking about life after Pizarro? I mean, thinking that Charlie is going to be in a more advanced role with the two fives?
Yeah, exactly. Charlie with a little bit more advanced, more offensive, shoot the ball if you have it, and create. I mean, if it's Pizarro over Charlie, then that's fine too. I haven't liked Chubby that much in this start of the season, but that's, I think, how he'll start it. And also, Graneviter can go a little bit more offensive, at least more than Celso. So, you know, if it's needed, he can actually create some cool chances. And I don't know. I just want to see him play, really. That's where I'm at.
Yeah. No, I'm in the same boat. I want to see him. I mean, again, I'm going off what he's done for River, where the guy was a bloodhound. Just the guy would take away the ball, hand it over to the people whose job was to generate offense. And it's just, I'm hoping he can recapture that form where he'll go in strong, take away the ball from the opposition, give it to, Charlie or Pizarro or whoever's in that attacking role or attacking mid role, and yeah, it's just I'm eager to see if he can find that form again. But I guess, what do you guys want to see, just before we wrap up the show, what do you guys want to see against Santos and against Juarez? Like, I know we talked about it a little bit, what's gonna lower your panic meter, but it doesn't have to be score 4 or 5 goals, whatever, et cetera. It doesn't have to be that extreme. But I'll start with Paul. What exactly do you want to see to give you some type of faith that this team can turn it around?
I want to see the comeback of the defensive line we know. I don't know if Vangioni has one more week in his injury or he comes back this week, but hopefully like the back line that we know of and a system that works for both Pizarro and Funes Mori, or just the person who's most in form.
Yeah.
I mean, if I want to give maybe a scoring line prediction for the Juarez match, hopefully we get 3 points comfortably at home so we can build some momentum and take a lead at least from the TSM. So that'd be a good week for me.
Yeah. Pat, what's, regardless how small it is, what's something that you want to look for, whether it's the Santos or Juarez match, what's something that you want to see that's going to give you hope that this team's going to turn it around?
Well, first, I think it's attitude. Show me attitude that you want to turn it around, and then I feel like with attitude and with the talent that we have, that should be enough. Stop conceding so much goals, and because I mean at the end of the day, Rayos creates a bunch of chances, to finish them. But stop conceding so much goals. Yeah. You concede so much.
Yeah, Pat, I know you had some good news this week. Monterrey's expanding their academies, and they're heading into your neighborhood now. So if you want to just talk about that a little bit and inform people who aren't aware of how this all came about, at least to your knowledge, how did this all happen? And maybe if you know why they decided to go with Miami.
Yeah, well, a few months ago, we talked, me and Marcelo Masanti, who's with BMS Plus, that's where I do the show, El Rey del Monte y El Sobrino del Santo. We were talking and we said, you know, it would be cool to have, or he told me, it would be cool to have a Rayados Academy in Miami. was like, okay, yeah, that would be cool. Let's try and do it. So we contacted the club. We spoke to them. They told us everything that needs to happen for Rayados to open up an academy somewhere. And we decided that we'll do that for them. And we'll, you know, be the guys that put it all together. So we got everything that was needed, like in a checklist of things that are needed. I needed to do some sort of exam. It was pretty dense stuff. Come up with a sporting plan, facilities, everything. And then after that, after a few months of all that back and forth, Rayal sent us out the contract. We signed it, and we started Rayal's Miami Soccer Academy here, Miami. And it just started. So we're just like announcing it now. We have some awesome facilities that are crazy cool. People are, at least the kids are going to love it. And then,
No, I was just going to ask, like, what are some of like the short-term goals that you guys have out there? And what are like the eventual long-term goals, which I'm pretty sure one of them will include just having one of, you know, the academy players just play for not just Monterrey, but like actually have like a career, whether it be like in Liga MX or MLS, because pretty sure it's common knowledge that not all the academy players are going to play for the big club. It's just all about it's just giving them the opportunity to either pursue a career with the big club or guiding them to another club to, you know, to potentially play for.
Yeah, I mean, Rayal really also liked the opportunity of Miami just because of the diverse Latin backgrounds that are here. So Colombian, Venezuelan, Argentina, Uruguayan, all those kids will be wearing the Rayal's colors. And that's an official school, you know, of Rayal's. That's what gets Rayal's and the kids excited. Also, you know, short-term goals, it's obviously just having some, because it's Rayados and Rayadas, so there will be both. And it's just having people, kids there and having fun, creating some cool little training sessions, games, matches, official matches against other clubs here in Miami and in Florida. You know, just get it started, really, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And then the long term, and that's also a thing with Rayados, every year you get together, they have all the information. Just like this, it's literally a youth team in Miami for Rayados. So these kids will be able to, you know, actually go to Monterrey and actually train and probably even play with a youth academy in Monterrey.
Yeah.
Which obviously, I mean, Rayados is keeping tabs on all their schools. So that's something that's pretty cool. And obviously those goals are for kids that come out of here to play with Rayados. That would be freaking the best. But yeah. You know, at the end of the day, have kids do something cool after school, play soccer, and then have them be able to be the best player possible that they can be. So, those are the simple goals that we have. Because it's an awesome way of I mean, I know I loved it when I was a kid. So, I wanted to do that same thing.
Yeah, I wanted to ask Pat, and then I'll bring in Paul for this, but how does this help grow the profile of Monterrey? Because I don't know if you saw that tweet by Goal, but they tweeted out the most valuable clubs in Latin America, and number 5 or number 6? I have to go back and look at it, is Monterrey. They're behind what? They're behind some of the bigger clubs in all of Latin America. Like Boca Juniors, Flamengo, Palmeiras, River Plate. I think they're 5. I think those are the only 4 that are ahead of him. But I know we've talked about this, Pat. How can Monterrey continue to grow their profile and you know, just get out of their comfort zone and reach other parts of the U.S. But how do you think this adventure that you're having there is going to help grow the profile of the club? Because I'm pretty sure a lot of the people there, at least the diehard soccer fans, are going to know who Monterrey is, but the casual fans might not.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, Rayados has schools all over Mexico, but in the U.S. they only have in Texas, California, Arizona, I think, or Utah. There's like more in where there's Mexicans and Mexicans know of Monterrey. Here, obviously, some like you said, some hardcore fans will know Monterrey, but the part where Monterrey kind of gains from all this, and they told us that they were excited for that, is that kids and parents of the kids will be wearing the Monterrey colors. And whenever they go back home to Colombia, Venezuela, Argentina, Uruguay, they'll be telling everybody, hey, he actually plays in the Rayados Academy in Miami, and it's official school for Monterrey, and blah, blah, blah. And this gets spread all over Latin America, or at least, you know, from the kids that play there. So that's something that's really going to help Monterrey, just their team, followed by more people from other mm-hmm. other nationalities. I mean, the kid who's going to play for us here in Miami is going to be watching the games. Everything just kind of sums up.
Yeah.
It sounds like a good way of basically building your brand a little more. Maybe, like you said, targeting another audience. And, I mean, with the diversity that there is in Florida, or Miami specifically, I mean, growing the brand into Colombia, Venezuela, Uruguay, Argentina. I mean, places that hopefully in a few years we're going to maybe visit Argentina and see someone with a Real jersey.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the idea. Not only that's something that we like, that's not our main idea as a school, but Rayados, that was their, like,
yeah.
Yeah, that's so cool that people from all over the world or nationalities will be able to wear this jersey.
Yeah, I think that's going to wrap it up for tonight. I know it's 1 o'clock in the morning where you're at, Pat, so appreciate you staying up. And I know it's 12 where you're at, Paul. So, but Pat, if you want to add your Twitter account, I know you're doing stuff with BMS Plus, so if people already don't already follow, tune into that. But if you want to add that and anything else that you want people to know that you're doing.
Yeah, I had to come in late just because of that show. Where we talk Mexican soccer. Obviously, I try to plug Monterrey as much as I can. But if you just follow me on my Twitter, which is TsunamiPix, everybody will see. I post every video there and all the links. So
yeah. I was going to ask you, Pat, as far as like the academy information, where can people, just in case, you know, I'm pretty sure you're going to tweet this out, and anybody listening that's from the Miami area, where can they find like information to potentially, you know, have their kids enrolled in this academy?
Yeah, so we have a website. It's literally rayadosmiami.com. And then we also have a WhatsApp number where you know, people can contact us there more directly. Mm-hmm. And it's 786. Yeah, hold on. I got the wrong one.
I'll put the website underneath the tweet to all this. So
and then the number is 305-726-1831. But they're all over my Twitter, and also Masanti, which I retweet him every time he tweets something about the school. He also puts all the information and all that. So yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I'll put the website link be on this when I tweet this out, I'll tweet it out underneath. Paul, if you want to plug in your pluggables.
Sure. Well, you can follow me on Twitter at Paul_GotUpTheQ. And yeah, I don't have a Real school set up, but I'll look into it.
Where do you live, Paul? Where do you live?
I'm in Texas, in South Texas. Okay, cool. So there's actually
there's a few schools there.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. You could probably just shout them out, but the ones in their neighborhood. But you can obviously follow the Rayados 90 Twitter account. Rompas told me he needs to like fact check this, but he told me that our podcast is in the top 100 in terms of like, I think he said sports podcasts or podcasts in general. And I think we're like number 77. So like, I know last time we talked about this, Pat, we were like number 92.
Yeah.
Something like that. But he said that it's 77. I'm not sure if it's just sports category or podcast in general. He's going to try to give me like a screenshot. So, he says we're climbing up the rankings. So, I appreciate everybody that listens and just follows the Twitter account. But yeah, just follow the Twitter account at Rayados90. Hopefully next week we can come back with a more happier podcast and lose this concern that we have. So for myself, Pat, Paul. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Well, guys, welcome to the Rumpus segment of Rayados 90 podcast. I apologize in advance because, as usual, I'm outside. So there's going to be noises in the background. But with nothing else to comment, let's begin. Well, the first topic that I want to comment on is what's happening really with Rayados? Meaning, we have 2 points out of 15? No, 6 games now. So out of, out of 18, 2 points out of 18 possible. And well, this is not something that we expect. We expected as fans. I mean, I did mention it in a couple podcasts ago that it was normal that Rayados started to play by the 7th or maybe 8th game, right? Because you're coming off of a championship. You didn't have any rest. You didn't have any preseason. You basically went on a week vacation, and then get back at it. So it's normal that the results are not being the ones that you expect. But the thing is that I think that everybody was thinking more so of maybe having 6 or 8 points, maybe 50%. Of the total points that you have played, but you have only around less than 20% of the actual points. So this is something alarming, because whether or not you have preseason or you are the champion, but you were not able to complete a training session properly, that's not an excuse for not winning. At least the games you have here at home, those are supposed to be the ones that you have to basically win no matter what. So I think that that alarm has reached his peak, and now Tony Mohamed and his boys have to win. Now you have 11 games to go. That's 33 points. You need at least 25, 26 to get to the Liguilla. So you have to basically gather 23, 24 points out of those 33. So that's about 75%. According to how you've been getting the results, it's not possible. If these results don't change, you are gonna be facing a harsh reality when the tournament is over. You're gonna be out of the Liguilla, and it's gonna be hell for Mohamed and his boys. Right now, I think that on the management side, they did the best they could. We all think that we need a central back. we all shout that. We all talk about it. But Davino trusted in Basanta because he said that he was ready to deliver. He's not bad, but he's old. So he's not the one, the defender that you have, that you're going to put the responsibility on. And you needed one central back, but you didn't get it. So it's complicated, but it is what it is. I mean, you are still the reigning champion. So you have that in your advantage, but you're not gonna win only because you are the reigning champion. You have to play good, you have to score goals, basically. For instance, this last game, this past week was awful because you lost against Necaxa, and you lost against León. Both games were away. I think that against León, we did good the first 45 minutes. If Funes Mori were more accurate, we would have at least a 2-goal advantage to go to the first half, but he wasn't on his day, and we ended up just scoring one chance, and that basically came to bite us at the end of the first half with a review from the VAR that it was supposed to be a penalty kick, which wouldn't been just the penalty, maybe the goal, and that's it. But the VAR reviewed the play, and it was the foul was outside of the penalty box. So by rule, you're not allowed to expel, show the red card to a player who committed a penalty. This is called the double punishment. So it's either the penalty or the red card. But in this case, because it wasn't in the penalty box, the referee was able to show the red card to Nico Sanchez. And aside of that, in that play, León scored the goal to draw the game. Chapo Montes did. And then on the second half, it was pretty much a concert by León. They had the ball, they had the chances, they had the everything. I think that it was really short, that the 3-1 result, it was short when you take into consideration what actually happened on the field, because we deserve to be at least, to get at least another 2 goals in against us, but León kind of just got the third goal and they just relaxed. So that was basically the week. One thing that I want to point out is that it kind of surprised us that because Pizarro's situation, that either he's leaving to Miami or not, he didn't train throughout the week, and the first substitution that Mohamed did offensively was him. And it was kind of a surprise, because you have, for instance, Vincent Janssen, who has earned that shot. He wasn't considered at all. I can understand that you needed to get the ball in order to create chances, and Pizarro did that. He didn't play bad, he played good actually. But again, he didn't train throughout the week, so it was kind of a surprise what happened there. Another thing that happened was that Maxi got into the game, and a lot of people is coming down on him, because more so because of the worth that he was basically sold to us. So everything that he does is gonna be under review, right? Pizarro basically cost almost the same, but I don't know why, because he's foreign, the people get to Maxi more than to the what we do to Pizarro, actually, because the cost was pretty much the same, but a lot of people grant Pizarro the final, the CONCACAF champion final against Tigres, But again, against America, Maxi Mesa did a great job on the second leg, which was more important because we were losing that game. So those were the things that I wanted to point out. Another thing that I want to mention is that right now there's a debate, where not much of a debate for us as Reals fans, but it is for Tigres fans, because Gignac is 3 goals away from breaking Humberto Suazo's scoring record, which is 121 goals. But I do want to mention something that Tigres fans do not consider when they compare both players. First of all, Humberto Suazo wasn't a striker per se. He was much more on the creation of the opportunities than actually scoring. At least the last 3 years that Suazo was here, you notice that the amount of goals that he scored wasn't as nearly as close to the first 3 or 4 years, because he was more on the creation, on the creativity of the actual game. He made the Denigris be the scorer, the top scorer. So when you try to compare Gignac to Suazo, remember first, Gignac has had 4 opportunities to win a CONCACAF championship, and he hasn't. Suazo he won 3 consecutive championships, CONCACAF, obviously. Gignac was brought here because Tigres wanted to win the Libertadores. Gignac didn't do that, so that's another thing. And the last thing is that Humberto Suazo had 120 goals, yes, but he also has 74 assists, and Gignac is almost there on the 121 goals, but on the assists department he has nearly 20, and I'm exaggerating. So they're not the same type of player. Maybe the two of them are clutch players, yes, but they are different breed of strikers. If you ask me, other than the fact that I'm a Rayados fan, I much rather have a Suazo than a Gignac, because I have a Funes Mori. So I have that, I have a striker. Funes Mori has over 100 goals in the same amount of time that Gignac has. But they don't compare them, because then you throw the titles, and Funes Mori only has 1 Liga, 1 CONCACAF Champions, and 1 Cup MX, right? So when we're talking about Gignac against Funes Mori, we throw in the titles. And when we're talking about Suazo against Gignac, we're talking about only goals. So that's the difference, the infamous si vale, no vale, right? That Tigres fans use in order to validate their points of view, which I don't respect, but I do understand. Because other than that type of analysis, there's not much to win if we're talking about both teams. Other than the fact that they do have more ligas, they have 7, we have 5, but it's only a 2 ligas difference. But if we're talking about international titles, well, we have 4, 5 if we count the CONCACAF Recopa in 93. So, and they have 0. So that's basically it for that discussion. I don't see the point of actually comparing those two because they are great in their own rights. I think that Gignac is the best player the Tigres has at the moment, not throughout the history. I still think that when it comes to strikers, Barbadillo was better. It was another time, it was much different, and Tigres didn't have that team that they have now that basically play for Gignac. So it's different. And when it comes to Suazo Gignac, there's no way we can compare those two. I advise Tigres fans to enjoy what Gignac is doing and not try to compare them, because there's no comparison, right? So we did have a Suazo and we enjoyed that Suazo. We wasn't comparing him to anybody back then. From the moment that he got here to the moment that he left, we always talk about Suazo being the best in our club's history, and we didn't compare him to anybody. If we compare him to somebody, it was with Bahia when he reached his scoring goal record. And that's about it. And Bahia was one of us also. So I know that they're not gonna stop doing that, and I understand. Just as a kid, they want the approval of their father, right? Yes, I said it. That's simply what it is. Facts, not opinions. And our last but not least is the following. I do hope that at least one player of Rayados hears this. No matter the results that we had this tournament, I want to tell them that I'm going to let that slide. Just because I know we're gonna play different starting tomorrow against Santos in La Copa. I know that they're not happy with the results. I know that they're not happy because they are the reigning champions. The press is going at them, but really, really, really hard, particularly against Pizarro, against Funes Mori, against Mohamed. So I know they're gonna use that as fuel to conquer all the points needed to be in La Liguilla. And why am I so confident? Because I have seen what this team is capable of. Last December we saw the best version of this Monterrey in the entire history of the club, playing against Liverpool toe-to-toe, winning the championship against America, which is the only great team that I consider that is here in Mexico. We won it fair and square, right? So because of that, I trust that everybody's gonna get in sync and overcome these results that we had in the previous games in order for us to get back to where we belong, which is at least the top 8 of the Liga MX. I trust that Funes Mori is gonna get back on track. I trust that Mohamed is gonna make the right decisions. Sorry. I trust that Pavon is gonna get better. Mesa is gonna be more important. Pizarro, if he stays, is gonna be a clutch player Vincent Janssen has all that it takes to be the best forward in the future of our club. And Barovero is on another level right now. Medina has kept that great level. Gallardo is playing good. Bangione is going to return and play good. I trust the entire team. Tomorrow we're going to see Craneviter. I hope he accommodates well with Celso, and we're going to see Charlie Rodriguez on a position that we haven't seen him, which is more of a, it's called enganche. It's more the tie between the midfield and the strikers. He has what it takes. He has that vision. He has that toque de balón. Those crosses that he does are amazing. So I trust in every single one of you guys. So because of that, I'm gonna say the following. I think that we're not gonna lose any game from here and out. Just the Toluca game, which is gonna be away in Toluca, Sunday 12 p.m. You all know what I think about those games. I said my my piece when we faced Pumas this tournament a couple of games back at 12 p.m. in Mexico City. So it's the same train of thoughts for Toluca at 12 p.m. So, well, I do wanna thank all my rompistas. We are almost getting to 10.4k on Twitter at Rompas is back. If you don't follow me, go ahead and do so. And well, shouts out to Eddie, to Pat, to everybody involved on the podcast. We are still the only podcast talking about Rayados in English. Well, not the only one, but at least the most important one. We are in the top 100 of English podcasts in Mexico, talking about across all the genres. We are there, so we keep growing, and we're gonna keep growing with you, with your amazing support. Always leave a comment, always leave a rate, always say what you think. We read every single comment. Thank you everybody for listening, and well, till next week.